You're a science teacher and you live for lab day. You love the hustle and bustle. It's the one day every cycle you and your students call your favorite. Probably not for very different reasons. They get to play and they're expected to talk to each other. And you have questions abounding. Everybody's raising their hand and you can't get there fast enough. So if it's everybody's favorite day, why is it so few and far between? In this episode, I'm going to share with you the five things I include in inquiry-based learning experiences that I deliver to my students every single day. If we've not met yet, I'm Lisa, and I'm all about helping secondary science teachers lock away their lecture notes for good, instead opting for making meaningful moments that turn into lasting learning. So let's jump right in. The very first thing I use each and every time I design a new learning activity is my guiding purpose.
Oh.
Now, don't shut off the video. Don't go anywhere. I know that sounds deep and profound and ooh, but it's real. It's my why. It's why I show up. And I was only able to get to that once I reframed my whole role as a science teacher. So bear with me just a little while I put this in context for you. If you don't already know me, you may not know that I've spent the last 15 years teaching chemistry in an online cyber charter school classroom here in Pennsylvania. For the first 9 years, I did nothing but lecture because what else was I supposed to do? In chemistry, let me make this real for you. Even all wet lab experiments and glassware and measurement practice and all that aside, if I'm teaching about the periodic table and we're just looking at properties of substances and I want to pass around the room samples of different elements, of course, the first one that comes to my mind is mercury because it's a liquid and it's so ridiculously heavy. I can't do that. So when I talk about learning experiences, you might all be over there like, what is she even talking about? How is this possible in the online world? Well, I didn't think it was possible. I accepted that obstacle as a boundary. And I guess I actively decided that there was nothing else I can do. That doing science required students to touch stuff. My students couldn't touch stuff, so I couldn't do science with them. And what I accepted was this notion that all I have is science as a collection of facts, so that's what I would teach. But lecturing left me completely unfulfilled and totally frustrated because I'm a second career teacher. I did the science in private practice thing for a while, and the reason I became a teacher was to make a difference in a more direct way. I wanted to inspire students. I wanted them to feel the wonder of the world, and here they were showing no interest in me, and they absolutely were not participating. I mean, they didn't use their webcams. They still don't talk on the microphone. They didn't answer in chat, and we even had these fancy polling tools where you could just ask multiple choice questions, yes or no, and they won't even press the button. I mean, at one point, my entire lesson planning was designed so that almost every step I took, I asked a question just so that I could make it super easy for them to give me something back. But actually, it always ended up being one way instead of two. And in terms of best practices teaching, I mean, I couldn't get participation, so I had no way to diagnose what my students could do and not do until test time came. Maybe the worst part about this for me was that I didn't know how to change the outcome. I thought I was rocking it with my lessons. They looked really pretty and they were very clear. I had some killer images and I was... One year I did a whole project and like how to teach with analogy, but when it came down to it, I was delivering the same script 3 times a day And that totally bored me to tears. If you think you could recite a lesson from memory, go ahead and hit that like button now. And then make sure you come back here. Bookmark the video or add it to a playlist or something. Come back and see in about a week how many thumbs up we've got on this video, because I'm willing to bet there are so many science teachers out there feeling this exact same thing. But let's get back to my guiding purpose as the first tool in my toolbox to provide learning experiences for my students. I eventually became frustrated enough to either leave my job, which kind of wasn't going to happen, or find a solution. I am just have the personality where I just don't accept things too easy. So I set out to do my own research and try to find, like, outside of my teaching certificate program, what are the best practices for teaching science? Because clearly I missed something. And some internet research led me to a blog post. The blog post just quoted an education researcher. This researcher had published books. And so I bought the book and I read the book. But the book itself, while a great read and I'd recommend it to anybody, the book itself didn't really give me strategies. What it did was it gave me a revelation. And the revelation was, I don't need students to touch things to do science. This might be oversimplifying, but I think it really gets to the idea here. Let's just take a quick look at a dictionary definition of the word science. And nothing fancy, just a quick Google search. It has two definitions. The first one reads, the systematic study of the structure and behavior of the physical and natural world through observation, experimentation, and the testing of theories against the evidence obtained. Now, that kind of sounds heavy, but not so much. Systematic study, observe, experiment, and test. Look at that second definition. It's actually labeled archaic, and it says knowledge of any kind. So, just in case you didn't get that, science is a thing we do. Science is not a collection of facts. And as a science teacher, I should be thinking about this and teaching like a gym teacher. Gym teachers teach how to play basketball and volleyball and golf and all those fun things. Well, I get to teach how to do science. And I honestly started to think of it as a life skill. So, you know, cycling back here to guiding purpose, I can impart for students, I can give them the gift of making informed decisions. I could teach them how to take in their world, process it, and spit it back out as something they can use. Let's make this real for a minute. Now, I teach high schoolers, so I'm gonna go to driving a car. There's a lot of practical science going on in driving a car. You may not think so. You may think there's science in fixing the car if something's wrong with it, but in terms of this idea, it's a study and involves observation and experiment. I'm thinking that just driving the car and taking in all of the surroundings, all the critters on the side of the road, all the signs that are upcoming, maybe even the conditions of the road, our brain so quickly goes through and cycles through this process of decision making that really if we just slow it down, we realize we are thinking critically about our next step. And so if I teach students how to observe and explore and write down all of their observations and process them, they can come out and pretty much make a pretty good informed decision. And I was all over that. Now, hopefully I've inspired you a little bit there, and I'm gonna pose a challenge to you. I would like for you to, if you can think of anything in this moment, even pause the video if you need to, everyday action that you need the skills of observation and critical thinking to be able to explain something to someone or make a decision. I decided I was no longer going to be the science teacher who covered properties of atoms on Monday and who covered bonding on Tuesday. Instead, my role, my expertise would be applied in creating that activity, creating the systematic study for my students to uncover and reveal those ideas for themselves. These activities then inherently have to include skills like observation and experimentation or exploration, certainly analysis, and even I can contribute to their communication skills. So you know what else this did for me? It made class time totally less about me and completely about them. The second thing I absolutely need every time I set out to design an inquiry-based activity for my students is technology. Well, duh, Lisa, you work as an online school teacher. Of course you do. You have no other resources. You just got done telling me that. Yes, absolutely. And I'm not talking about like live meeting software. I'm talking about tools and resources to transport my students to places, to see things, to play with things they couldn't possibly anywhere in the real world. Not just not my classroom, not your classroom either. As a chemistry teacher, this becomes real and alive when I take my students to the particle level, when they can get inside an atom and see how electrons bop around and gain energy and lose energy. When I take them to show them how two atoms do their whole special electron thing to bond. When I explore with them the property of diffusion of gases or how movement and particle behavior in gases is affected by multiple different changes we can make up here. So it totally and completely allows me to connect the main ideas of chemistry, which are particle level, person level. And in no classroom anywhere can a student actually touch, see, dissect an atom. And now I know, what Lisa, you teach chemistry. Mm-hmm. But if I taught earth and space science, I'm absolutely sure there exists a resource somewhere that would allow me to take my students to the core of the earth and back up through all the way to the crust to, again, connect what's in there to what's out here. So I hear you over there, Lisa, absolutely. And I've seen those companies, they produce amazing simulations. My district won't pay for it. My school won't pay for it. I'm certainly not paying out of pocket. Totally. I wouldn't expect you to. I don't pay for any simulations at all. I don't pay for any videos. I don't pay for resources. Yes, there are some amazing companies out there. And maybe your district has a fantastic curriculum company that provides all this stuff for you, like on a special private website. Kudos, that's awesome. Definitely use it because it is being paid for. But if you don't have that kind of situation, like I don't, you don't need to wait for someone to secure it for you. Quick, simple searches will do the job. There's so many not-for-profit organizations out there that allow common use of their resources. Common use being for teaching in an educational setting. And that's the value in learning how to design inquiry-based learning activities, because now your role transforms. And you need to have that resourcefulness. You need to know how to put it together to use their tool. The third thing I need to design interactive, inquiry-based learning experiences for my students are standards. And I'll even get more specific and tell you I need the next generation science standards. Don't fret. It doesn't matter if you don't work in a state where they are required. While no standards are, I don't think, really easy to sort through, the NGS ISS, because of its multiple pieces and all these like table boxes, can be particularly daunting. But aside from their assessment features and the idea of a phenomenon-driven lesson or unit, there comes two main ideas, two main aspects to NGSS. You have core ideas and you have cross-cutting concepts. And the core ideas teach us what we're supposed to teach. And if you're a veteran teacher out there, you probably know what you're supposed to teach in whatever content you teach. The cross-cutting concepts, though, you know what they do? They really bring to light the essence of science. They are things like identifying patterns and addressing the role of an individual piece in a larger system. The scope and size of various objects or systems. The idea of cause and effect. There's a whole series of them, and they really do, if you become familiar with them and use them, create science experiences for your students. So you do have a place to look and go, like, this is exactly what I want to bring to life for this content. And when we talk about bringing to life the content through an activity, we absolutely have to include task instructions. I want to go ahead and say I've worked with students long enough to know and be able to test this hypothesis that when they don't participate or they aren't engaged, it's probably not because they're refusing to be. It probably comes down to one of two things. They're either confused or they're lacking confidence. And maybe those two things go hand in hand. But you know what can combat both of them? Clarity. And we can provide clarity by providing instructions and being purposefully clear about what we want students to do. Chances are, you know, I really feel like we all need a minor college degree in psychology to be teachers. Had no training in that. I don't know if you all did, but I feel like we needed it too. I think probably when we hand something to students for them to do and they look at it and they're like, oh, okay, I can do this. Or, ugh, I have to do this. And totally like freaking out inside. That's what I imagine. I want to produce the student that goes, ah, I can do this. And I believe we can achieve that with clear task instruction. Now, the task instructions I work with and create are a tad bit different than you might think if you're writing a conventional or traditional lab activity, especially if you are a biology, chemistry, physics teacher. Because our traditional labs are, in my opinion, a little bit tragic. What we do is we focus on teaching the concepts first, and we lecture all the things we know about an object or a system or core idea. And then we let them loose in the lab to play with that idea, to explore it, and to see what it's like in real life. Maybe, for example, making it real with chemistry. I'm actually right now teaching single replacement reactions. And I'm not first showing students what single replacement reactions look like or what they're in, what's involved in them, or any of the things. They're jumping right in. Because we're using technology, they can see two versions of single replacement reactions in action. They can see the macroscopic version and they can see the particle version. And when they're done, they can tell me what's happening and what will happen in every single replacement reaction. And so in that environment, it's so much less daunting to commit and to cooperate, because I'm not putting any students on the spot for the right answer. They haven't already learned about what a single replacement reaction is, and they aren't now faced with explaining what they see before them. Instead, they're faced with sharing evidence with me to support what they think is happening. And you know what? Maybe they have a different viewpoint somehow than the next student. And then we could talk about that, and wow, do we get some different perspectives. It's a much, much more enriching process. So just to be clear, when I write in task instructions for an activity my students are going to do, they usually include all the same things. students are always trying to make observations. They are always committed and asked to record those observations. They are always prompted to review those observations. And then they usually have to come out with some inference about them. And sometimes those task instructions need to be super specific, and sometimes they need to be not so super specific. Task instructions are a big place where we could differentiate. And that's for another video. The last piece that I need when I'm assembling an inquiry-based learning activity for my students is an artifact outline. So I have a lot to say about this. What you might think of as an artifact in your traditional lab environment would be like the worksheet that you give them, or the notebook that you expect them to keep and you might review, or maybe it's a packet of stuff. An artifact, kind of by definition, is nothing more than evidence of their learning, evidence of what they did. In fact, side story, I remember many years ago when there was a call, an open call at my school, they sent it to all the teachers, please send us your student artifacts from your classes. We would love to use them for I don't know what. And I remember thinking in my head, why did they send this to everyone? Surely only the art teacher and the music teacher might have artifacts to share. Maybe the elementary school students, but up here in chemistry, like, I have nothing to share. And at the same time, I pined for that. I really, because that's the teacher I always wanted to be. And so eventually I came around to figuring out how to get that done.
5 minutes later.
So an artifact outline in my activities is nothing more than space for students to document their observations. But as I have continually called these inquiry-based activities throughout this video, you can provide a different level of guidance with inquiry. And perhaps part of this artifact outline is prompting students to pay particular attention to various pieces. Or, not perhaps, absolutely, I have structured it and designed it in a way with the cross-cutting concepts of science in mind, those science practices we talked about from NGSS, things like patterns and systems and models and size and proportions. I know what I want students to say aha about when they're working through the activity. They're not just going through the motion and learning the thing. It's a combination of going through the motion, documenting the thing, taking it all in, and then coming out the other side. So it is quite strategic. I threw out the word differentiation there a few minutes ago too. I don't want anybody out there thinking this means dumbed down or guidance. Guided inquiry does not mean made simpler. It only means made more accessible. Certainly, by its very nature, this type of teaching and learning is higher order thinking. It demands higher order thinking, so it includes higher order questioning. In fact, the part of the artifact outline, there's always a part of an artifact outline I like to call data-dependent analysis. And it might be qualitative word observation data, or it might be quantitative number data. It could take any form, but analysis is analysis. And the idea of calling it data-dependent comes from a recent shift in literacy teaching skills that are about text dependence and literally pointing to the text says this. Well, I want my students to say the data says that. And so this is intended to serve all of our students. Also, I want to address the use of the word outline, artifact outline. That's totally not semantical for me. Semantical? It's not semantics. I'm not calling it a worksheet, though if I could call it a worksheet, that would be okay. As long as I'm keeping it to one page, that's a real big thing for me. If I can't keep it to one page, I need to narrow the focus of the task instructions. Because you know what more than one page does? More than one page produces overwhelm. And students who are overwhelmed, they are over it. and I'm constantly trying to encourage confidence. The other thing the one-page outline does is it makes it so super easy for me to know where all my students are, like with respect to timing, but then also with respect to mastery at a glance. I do use a digital software that anybody could use, not a school-specific thing. I do use a digital platform for delivering these activities that allows me from my computer to just see everyone's status and snip and clip the best of it and the worst of it, things that are common misconceptions, you know, my favorite no, and then also all the amazing things too, as well as showing different perspectives if that's a possibility. If I had to be flipping through several pages, it would be much more time consuming for me to access that information and use it on demand. If you were counting along, I think I might have forgotten to name the last one. If you were counting along, that was five. Five things that I include in all of my inquiry-based learning activities every time I sit down to design one. Now, getting to this point was a super hard-fought battle for me. And it's work I'm extremely proud of, but very passionate about. I have the perspective, this unique perspective of always welcoming new students into my school who have fallen victim to just what science has become in our school system. A collection of facts that you can either remember and do well with, or you can't remember, so you don't do well with them. These students create this notion in their head that they're good at it or they're not good at it. All the while, they're not even doing it. They're just constantly in this cycle of recall and then scoring based on their recall. So I'm super passionate about bringing this to as many students as I can, and to bring it to more students, I have to bring it to more teachers. I have packaged this up for you as the Active Learning Action Plan. And you can get it today at labineverylesson.com/activeplan. You can think of it like an online mini course. It's about 3 hours of watch time spread apart into 4 or 5 videos. But then you also get a bunch of printables, cheat sheets, checklists, guides, notes, outlines and templates, because I don't want you to just learn about the action plan. I want you to use the action plan. Remember that mindset makeover we talked about that I had to have? It's included. And not only do I recommend that you start here with the plan, but I expect that you'll probably want to come back here at several points while you're getting used to using the plan. In the year that I rewrote my entire curriculum this way, I needed that mindset makeover multiple times. There were countless lessons for which I sat down and simply said to myself, how am I going to make an activity from this? Maybe there wasn't a simulation available. Maybe I couldn't find a good video. What am I going to do? Certainly, I want you to get to your guiding purpose. Certainly, I want you to get to your why, because your guiding purpose and your why will probably be different from mine and my why. We serve different students and we come from different backgrounds. But how we implement active learning and how we get to this scientific method, higher order thinking thing every day, that culture of curiosity, is going to come from us doing one or two things and keeping focused on those one or two things every time we set about to lesson plan. How about my split up the standards technique? Would you like that? To learn how to look at any standards at all, no matter which ones you use, and pull out two things. Two things. Core idea, what you need to teach, and that science practice thing, what you need to go after. This is essential before you even get about figuring out what you're going to use as your main resource. You'll also get a toolbox for tackling those task instructions, a clear outline to follow, and a checklist for when you have made an attempt to look at all the things that could be there or should be there. You get the benefit of the trials and tribulations I've had and what I've had to sort out to really be successful. Because can I just tell you, there are at least two lessons in the very beginning that crashed and burned. And that might happen for you too, because we are all different. It's a human job, but this will set you on the right foot to know exactly what you're going after and how you can tweak it for your audience. And finally, the Everyday Artifact Outline Assembly Guide. Whew, that was a mouthful. Now, this doesn't mean you're going to make one artifact outline and use it all the time. It is not that plug and play, unfortunately. However, the notion here is if you know how to build an artifact outline that gets students to process and think critically about their observations and the information they collected using the task instructions, then you could do this every day and bring consistency to your classroom. Consistency that will result in confidence because you will create a culture of curiosity. Now, I am so real about this. I do not want you to jump into this action plan and just binge watch 3 hours, come out of it and sit there at your computer and try and fail. Sometimes speedy is not the way to go. So, as part of this action plan, you will receive an email series from me directly detailing for you an efficient and comprehensive 8-day plan for creating your very first activity. Not only are you going to get that email series from me, as part of this plan, you get access to an integrated community. You don't have to be on any of the social media things because it's not there. It's integrated into the space where I keep all of the templates, all the tools, all the video trainings. And you can connect with other science teachers there, maybe teach your same content or in your same state or at your same grade level. And you can connect with me directly. I'm happy to answer any questions you have or anything you run into Monday through Friday within 24 hours. Another resource to encourage your goal to be consistency. Now, I know you're going to start out with this and you're kind of just going to be like feeling it out. Maybe this will work. Maybe it won't. I'll just try. But I really want to push you toward consistency. So to do that, I just included this super simple resource. It's just a Google sheet. And I think there's a PDF copy as well. It's a little fancier, probably a little less practical in the plan, designed for you to just almost keep a diary. It's the activity alignment journal. I could never send anybody out to do this work and claim that I know what I'm doing unless I show you exactly what my work looks like. So one of the bonuses included here is what I'm calling an interactive exemplar. It's just a bonus video meant to show you how I plan an active learning experience, the beating heart of my lesson. So I'm right there with you. You could use it any way you want. You can work alongside it, creating your own, doing the things I do, but with your content, your standards, and your resource. Or you can watch it the whole way through to gain a different perspective. And finally, you may not see this as super important right now. It might just seem like a fluffy sort of thing to add into the package, but it's something I use in my daily practice, and it's a digital planner with a student activity tracker. Now, the student activity tracker is the money part, because what it will do if you use it is it will expose for you all sorts of patterns. It can show you which activities are producing less engagement or more engagement. You can look at the student level and, you know, which students are consistently mastering or just completing your activities. It's also just a great organizer for knowing who your students are, whether or not they require special accommodations and keeping attendance and that sort of thing. And it's all, because it's digital now, it's all like linked together. So there's a year calendar and monthly calendars and weekly calendars, and they're all linked together, and they are not for this year. You can fill in the dates all the time. If you use an iPad, you can get the GoodNotes app and work this amazing magic. And make a copy of it every year or erase it every year and start fresh. Or I do also give it to you as a PDF so you can print portions of it. So maybe right now you just want to use the student activity tracker and you'll build to integrating all the things. Right now I can click on a day in a month, 5 months ago, and look exactly at what a student did on that day. Did he or she do the activity? Did they master it, complete it? Were they there? Do they have an IEP? All the things. And so this was created with lots of love and really data-informed instruction in mind. So if all that sounds super for you, head on over to labineverylesson.com/activeplan and get instant access now. Then make sure you come on back here every week for more episodes that will lead you through the nuances, the trials, the tribulations, and some super amazing tips for undergoing a complete student-centered transformation in your science classroom.